Hello and welcome to Science Unscripted. It's Connor here.
And Gib.
We tend to begin with emails, and we've read many of them joyously, sometimes occasionally with consternation. We've never had an email before that was from a cat. And that's what we have for you today. And if you're wondering what on earth that would even mean, it's from an not from the cat itself. It's from an owner channeling his cat. I'll go ahead and read it.
Yeah.
And or paraphrase some parts of it. It's a longer email talking about how these cats were rescued at the age of 10 weeks after a Category 4 hurricane hit the coast, leaving them, I believe, ownerless.
And this author, is this one of the group of cats?
Yeah, this is from the from the cats themselves.
Oh, for all the cats wrote this.
Yeah, so I guess it's a collective
group email.
Cat
email. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
And I'll just read the final paragraph. We never understand anything you say about science on the box that makes sounds, so the speakers, but want to thank you for the bird songs and water gurgling brook noises at the end of the episode last week.
With reference then to the Danny Longman interview and the sounds of nature that you played after that, were nice.
They were very nice. For those who missed that episode, it was about evolutionary mismatch, that feeling some of you may have that the world that you have woken up into stresses you out, doesn't feel right, leaves you with an anxious feeling in your stomach, things you can't quite define, and that's because we have not evolved for this world as it currently exists, especially the urban environment, but for an outdoor natural world. That's what this biological organism that I'm trapped inside is meant to explore and be a part of. And that's what Danny was fundamentally trying to express. The more you get back out into that natural world, the more positive effects you will experience. The email ends saying that those sounds that we put on the radio to mimic being in the outdoor world, because just the sounds can have a good positive effect, that it was truly exhilarating for these cats, and that unfortunately our boss, so the owner, fell asleep.
Ah.
And the final word, meow.
That was the feline perspective with regard to those sounds we played at the end of the show last week. This is the human. This is Jenny writing, I also must say that the biological need for the sounds of nature and a slower pace to life is real. And I find that the need has become more pressing the older I get. Perhaps it's the actual speed at which data and noise comes at us. Perhaps it's my body becoming less resilient due to age. Likely it's a little bit of both. At any rate, hearing the bird song at the end of your last podcast, all caps here, literally made my heart rate slow and my breathing become more relaxed. It made me stop what I was doing and take note. That was Jenny. Thank you.
Thank you, Jenny. Yeah, last thing I'll say there, I was reminded, even as we were speaking at the end of that interview last week, of a very recent trip to my sister-in-law's relatively new house, or house that they have recently moved into, and in their newly renovated guest bathroom, restroom, right near the door, they have... It's shaped like a birdhouse, and it's movement based. As soon as you walk into that bathroom, bird song and sort of forest sound starts chirping. It made me feel good. The whole purpose is to cover up the sounds of someone using that restroom.
Yeah,
that's why it's making those sounds.
I thought you were going to say they had a babbling brook created.
Oh. Like no, that was the toilet, but the toilet didn't quite sound like that. On to the science now. We have quite a lot to talk about here. The first part starts out sort of surprisingly to me. I didn't know this existed. At the McDonald's Impact Summit.
Oh.
Yeah. Like, what is that? And it happens in Washington, D.C. biannually. This year is, I guess, the 70th year, 70th celebration of the establishment of the company. And according to the McDonald's website, quote, 400 owner-operators, suppliers, and company leaders come to engage in open dialogue with policymakers from both sides of the aisle. We're not red or blue, a reference to Republicans or Democrats in the United States, were golden. Now, I should have clarified, obviously.
In reference to the arches, probably.
The golden arches, yeah. McDonald's, probably the best-known fast food company in the world. I don't think it needs much more explanation. But here what's happening is the U.S. President Donald Trump has taken to the podium, to the stage, to say a few things.
And, you know, I just might add, this is also the golden age of America because we are doing better than we've ever done as a country. Prices are coming down and all of that stuff. And, you know, they talk about different terms for that. But I will tell you that nobody has done what we've done in terms of pricing. We took over a mess. We had the highest, think of it, the highest inflation in the history.
Some debatable claims there.
In fact, I should have prefaced it by saying that. Forgot to do that. Those are claims. We're not here to necessarily debunk them or confirm them based on facts or data, because it's very, very complex when you're talking about prices. Where are you from? Which region? What is the time frame? Because it's usually arbitrary. But I think for most of you out there listening to this right now, you know what the actual reality is for you, or what you're seeing when you go to the grocery store and you go shopping and you see the prices.
If you're living in the United States.
If you're living in the United States, definitely. But also, I would say elsewhere around the world, that the claim that prices are going down doesn't seem to hold up in practice. I think many people would agree with that. Now, the reason we're talking about this is I want to just point out something. I talked about this on TikTok in a much shorter version of it. That's DW Science on TikTok. Mm-hmm. But what I want to say here is the next time you hear something like this, something that sounds demonstrably false but keeps being repeated, is that this is there's a name for it, for what's happening there. It's called the illusory truth effect. The illusory truth effect is basically the idea, and this has been researched and confirmed and confirmed, that when something is repeated enough, more people believe it.
Regardless of its veracity, whether it's true or false.
Yeah. And so I kind of like this one just to go quickly through some of the science very quickly.
Yeah.
Because it begins in 1977, and there they were really looking at facts that were either true or false. So you had 60 questions. Is it true or is it false? Then you did it again, and then you did it again. And are these, you know, are they true or false? And unbeknownst to the participants, some of the questions were also in the second test and in the third. And when they were repeated, the amount that you said were true went up. Or those, I should say, they were called true more often as a result of the repetition. Oh, I've seen that before. Hmm. That's probably true.
Yeah.
That's what happened. Then in 87... they thought, well, that's true with facts. What about opinions? Does the same thing hold true? So they had 100 statements for the participants in week one. Is this opinion true or is this opinion false? They came in again week two, same kind of study. And some of them were repeated. I'll quote here. Results suggest that all types of repeated statements were rated as more valid than their non-repeated counterparts. So if you've seen it before.
The more times you heard an opinion or saw an opinion.
The more valid it becomes.
Okay.
It doesn't matter whether it's actually correct or incorrect, or whether you agree with it. I'll jump ahead to my favorite study of all. There are lots of them. This one from 2015, and it's called Knowledge Does Not Protect Against Illusory Truth. And here they just thought, let's take this to the extreme. Let's confront people with something that's not debatable at all. It's absolutely counterfactual. And one of the examples was them telling participants again and again that the Atlantic Ocean falsely is larger than the Pacific Ocean. This is obviously not true. Mm-hmm. But the more that was repeated, the more people begin to say it was
true. To change their mind and say, oh yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Okay. More recent research, Max Planck, showed that online people tend to share things that they've just seen more often. They're more likely to share it. And that all of this comes down to effectively processing. It's the idea that our brains are sort of set up to try to understand information in the most efficient way, or the easiest information. And if I look at it, I've seen it before, so I understand it immediately, I'm more likely to consider that valid. And to go all the way back, this goes further back evolutionarily, that it's kind of groupthink in a different way. I've heard, this is what my group seems to think. I've heard it. I've seen it a lot. I don't want to go against that, because then I'll be kicked out of the tree and thrown into the savannah, or kicked out of Athens and I won't have a place to live.
I've got something to say on that. I found two experiments from social psychology that I think can possibly elucidate what's going on here, and maybe not blame the people who believe some of these false statements, if we can call them that. When you're told that prices are going down, that inflation has never been this low, people believing that could be just one of our tendencies, human tendencies. And the first one of these social psychological experiments goes back to 1935. Conducted by Musafer Sharif. he had participants, or actually, first of all, it was one single participant in a dark room staring at a stationary point of light on the wall. Stationary meaning it is not moving. And the question for the participant was, how much is that light moving?
Mm-hmm.
And these participants said between 2 and 6 inches. And that is normal, because when you are in a dark room and there's a one point of light, that light moves, because we have no frame of reference. We have nothing to attach it to make it stay where it is. So that's normal for it to move inside their heads. But when you put other participants in that dark room and tell those participants, say that it's 4 inches, then those participants who initially said between 2 and 6 inches, they sit in there with these other participants who are saying 4, and they change their minds.
But 4.
The ones who said 6 move it down to 4, and the ones who said 2 move it up to 4. They both change their minds.
I see. I was going to say, because 4 is halfway between 2 and 6. It'd be the average.
But they said initially 6 and then changed their minds to 4 because of the other participants in the room who were saying 4.
Mm.
And then in the last phase of the experiment, they asked the original participants again to tell, to say, how far is that light moving? And now they all said 4. So they effectively changed their minds based on the opinions around them. And the second experiment, bear with me here, this is possibly even more clear. This is Solomon Asch in 1951. I'm going to give you a piece of paper. There are lines on that piece of paper. There's one line on the left side on its own, and then there are three lines on the right side. And of those three lines, they have varying lengths, but one of the lengths is the same length as that original line.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell which one has the same length, right?
It's basically like looking at a bar graph,
yeah,
with three bars and saying which of the bar is the same length as this extra bar off to the side.
But it's obvious which one is.
Yeah, it's C.
These are the actual lines in this experiment.
Yeah, this is C.
Okay, so on your own.
So A, B, and C. So C is the same as
C is the same as the original. Everyone in the first phase of the experiment said C is the exact same length as that original line. Then you got seven other people in the room with you telling you that A is the same length as that original line. And 3 out of 10 changed their minds, saying that A is now the same length as that original. It is clearly not the case.
Yeah,
yet 3 out of 10 people, based on what's going on around them, conformed to that judgment. So in today's world, when we have these bubbles, these algorithmic bubbles where everyone around you is telling you things, and you hear from the leader of your country that prices are going down, and people around you are saying prices are going down, then of course,
right,
you begin to believe it based on human proclivity, human individual and social psychology.
Right. Meaning, if you can zoom all the way out, there's no real blame there.
That's
There's no real blame, because it was, yeah, there's an evolutionary advantage in conforming.
Yes.
In not getting ejected from the group or rejected by a group, because it's a lot, for most of our human evolution, it's been way harder to survive on your own than in a group.
Yeah.
So it's better off to just literally to change your reality.
It trumps your rationality. I mean, I'm sorry to use that pun. It absolutely trumps your rational thinking. You know that C is the same, but then you say A because you want to belong. You want to conform. We have that in us.
Mm-hmm. And the lesson here, after a lot of science there, is just to be aware of the illusory truth effect. I think lots of interesting things to say, but I'm not sure researchers have come up with a way or researched a way for us to stop this. We do this. We default to it automatically. Familiarity is going to always be stronger than reason or logic.
Mm.
But I think being aware of it and calling it by its name, if you see it happening on TV or hear it in the radio or wherever, or see it online, oh yeah, this is just the illusory truth effect happening again. Somebody's repeating a claim again and again so that I get familiar with it and hence believe it.
Yeah. One more study, which I think might be connected. It's of a completely different nature. Out of the University of Pennsylvania, researchers there, the Wharton School, they wanted to see what is the difference when you search for something online using an LLM,
mm-hmm,
compared to a traditional Google search? Like, what does that do?
ChatGPT.
ChatGPT.
Yeah.
And they looked at 10,000 participants in a series of 7 experiments. And what they found was it leads to less deep, more shallow learning, both on the side of the person searching and the person that you are explaining what you learned about to. So the example they used here was, how do I create a vegetable garden?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question.
Either you ask ChatGPT, which takes all the information on the entire internet and synthesizes it in a perfect list, which saves you an unbelievable amount of time and effort, or you have to go about it on your own. How do I do this? I have to make many different searches, ask different questions. I have to verify or assess whether this information I'm reading is right and wrong. What happens? So it takes a lot longer. You think, from the perspective of the person searching, you think that what you've learned is deeper. You have more trust in what you've learned. You write a longer text, because that was part of the experiment. Once you've found out how to create your vegetable garden, you write to a friend on paper about how to do it. And then that friend goes through those texts and compares them. The ones that were created using LLM were thought to be more generic. Mm. And just not as good. But I think what's more important is from the perspective of the person searching, they invested less effort in writing their text.
Oh, yeah.
And didn't
yeah.
think their own information was as good. And it just reminds me of when I was at college. There was a time I was meeting with a mentor, Cyrus Hamlin, who's passed away now, the late Cyrus Hamlin. And I was complaining about the texts that I was reading were too hard. And he's like, "That's great. That is great, Gabriel, because the harder it is, the more you will learn."
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be forced to go to put more energy in, to put more into to synthesizing and gathering that knowledge. At the end of the year, you're going to have a bigger brain. You will know more.
Yeah. I don't know what popped into my mind is if I were trying to grow a vegetable garden here in Germany, mm-hmm. which let's say it is different than where I grew up. Not that I knew anything about
clay
that.
Clay soil is horrible.
Here, yeah, yeah. I would go to my neighbors. And in doing so, let's say I approached five neighbors, I would have very contradictory information. That always happens. It's like, no, what did he say? No, don't do that. That's wrong. What did she say? That's utter garbage, right? And so, you would have to synthesize all those contradictions and come to your own conclusions. And that's much better.
There you go. There's the line right there. Your own. The researchers were asked why, to theorize on why. It's because if you go at it using a Google search, you will have come up with your own conclusions, and you would have honed your critical thinking skills. And the reason why I said at the beginning that this might be connected to the self-deception and the illusory truth effect that we were talking about at the top of the show was that the stronger your critical thinking is, possibly the less susceptible you will be to that. The
Right.
less prone you will be to people who are telling you things that aren't necessarily true.
At the very least, yeah, you'll be looking for other sources of information as well. And that, last thing I'll say on the LLM or the ChatGPT style information seeking, confirms something that anecdotally people seem to be saying. Everyone's turning to these tools, these AI tools, to get a quick answer everywhere. And there is an argument, I don't know if that's true, that asking a lot of different questions of such a tool on very different topics could lead to shallower but broader information. Don't know. But here, obviously, if there's one topic in particular and you need information on it, you will expand your mind much more broadly if you go looking for it in various places.
Of course. The researchers there at Pennsylvania are not saying not to use LLMs. They are everywhere. We almost have to use them now. But what they're saying is use them more strategically. And know, maybe there are some things to ask ChatGPT to help you with. Other things, use a traditional Google search, because you will learn, at least to a deeper extent, about that topic by going after it and putting the energy in, putting the effort in.
Anything to say on LLMs like ChatGPT or the illusory truth effect, this idea that repetition makes it true over time, or nature? Or cats. cats writing emails. Let us know, su@dw.com. some of our listeners out there will have seen, at the very least, the headline of the next study that we're about to talk about. And some of you may have read articles about it already. I know we have listeners out there who are poring over science news. They send us tips, suggestions, new studies. It's wonderful. This one was about a tram or a subway, a metro.
A metro.
And it involved, very curiously, the combination of a pregnant woman and Batman. And the reason we're talking to you about it now, we're about to talk to the researcher himself, is because I think a lot of people out there got the core message wrong.
Science Unscripted.
Hi, my name is Francesco Pagnini. I'm a professor of clinical psychology in Milan. And I've just done a study about the Batman effect.
And Francesco, I mean, right now you're wearing a Batman mask, so I guess I could have called you Michael Keaton or Adam, Christian Bale.
Adam West.
What is the Batman effect?
The Batman effect is a cool phrase to say that when we see something unexpected in a very predictable environment, we tend to be more mindful, we tend to look around, be more attentive, and maybe noticing people who may be in need for some help. Maybe noticing a pregnant girl and leave her out of spot.
Okay, so this gets right into your study, which involved a pregnant woman inside a tram, I believe, and the appearance of a Batman. Can you describe your study?
In the control condition, I had a student of mine who pretended to be pregnant, stepping on the metro, and someone else, some other researchers, took note whether somebody left their spot or not. That happened in about 40% of the time, maybe slightly less.
So 2 out of 5 times when a pregnant woman steps into the metro, probably in Milan here, somebody stands up and offers her their chair so she can sit down. This is if in a normal metro condition.
And from a different door, I step in dressed as Batman. There's no interaction with the student. We don't even look at each other. But the simple presence of something so unusual as somebody dressed like Batman almost double the chances that somebody will leave her a spot.
Part of the reason I wanted to actually talk to you about this study, it got some media attention, and I think a lot of people possibly misunderstood it, because I believe the initial reaction was that it was because Batman is known for helping people, right? That's the association. It fights crime, saves people in distress, like a lot of superheroes. But I believe you and the authors, you're not saying that it's because of that.
Yeah, that's exactly the point. I don't think it's Batman in itself. As a matter of fact, we had this interesting awareness that only about half of the people who left their spot in with the Batman condition also noticed Batman.
Wait a minute. Half of the people who offered their seat said that they hadn't seen Batman, so that they did it yes. Unconsciously? Or
no. The point is, you know, when you walk around the street, and you see somebody looking up, and you know, spontaneously look up yourself. That's an evolutionary mechanism that allows us to, you know, look for unusual things that is potentially dangerous. So that's what happened. Basically, the presence of Batman disrupted, you know, the predictable pattern of a regular metro environment. And so people felt like, oh, there is something weird around. There's something unusual. Let's take a look. And then they look, and they saw the, you know, the pregnant lady, and maybe not Batman.
I love giving up my seat to a pregnant woman or an elderly person. And it, partially, I have to admit, is because I feel really good. It's such a simple act. It's so easy. And it makes you feel like such a good person for doing it. And yet, I'm also a daydreamer. So I probably miss half the people I could be helping. How do I create my own personal Batman? Or how do I wake myself up to help more people? Or how can our listeners out there do that?
I would say that the easiest way is to, time by time, look around and, for example, ask yourself, what are 3 things that I haven't noticed before? Or 3 details in people around us or in the environment that are new to me? Just paying attention on something that, you know, gives you the idea that you're not completely sure about what's around. that will force your level of presence, will force you to be mindful.
Just so that I'm not missing anything, you're talking possibly to a lot of people right now. A lot of people all over the world listen to our show. What is your message to them that you've learned from this study, from this experiment?
So the message here is that we live mostly on automatic pilot, and time by time, we don't need to see Batman around. We don't need to have a superhero around. We can just look around and notice new things and avoid taking for granted the things we think we know and be mindful about what's around, just time by time. And just introducing this little mindful insights will probably change our behavior and eventually improve us all as a society.
And when you're riding the bus or metro, do you do that, Francesco? Do you think to yourself consciously, okay, stop, Francesco, look around, notice three things that you didn't before?
You know, I do. I try to. I don't do that all the time. But time by time, I do it. And I recommend my students to do that.
That was Francesco Pagnini speaking to us from Milan, Italy.
Yeah.
Wearing the Batman mask from the latest trilogy, the Christopher Nolan trilogy.
And generously doing so because it was hot in there. It was really hot and he was dying to get that thing off. A lot to say there. I think that some of you may have come across that study, but not necessarily the actual conclusions that matter. Mm. We're all sleepwalking, myself included. We sleepwalk half the day, half our lives. And sometimes you need to be shaken awake, or no, you need to remind yourself to wake back up and to try to be better.
And it's not the goodness of the Batman character that motivates or stimulates the pro-social behavior. It's just that it's out of the ordinary. That's all it takes, is to be woken out of your somnambulist slumber with which we go through our days and sit on our proverbial trains. That's all it takes.
Wow. I'm just blunt. Your vocabulary. You had soporific 2 weeks back, and now somnambulous?
Yeah.
You're on an absolute S roll with sleep.
I pulled that one out of my head? Yeah, my head.
Your head.
My head.
Also, totally fascinating. We all know it to be true. You felt it. If there's any large event, a concert, a sporting event, this ripple, this murmur, this tumult that can pass through a crowd and you feel it without knowing what the source is. This social contagion is totally interesting, that we human beings, we are at a certain level when there are enough of us, one organism.
Yeah, and to reiterate the thing that you said, that, I mean, people know this, it feels good to help other people.
Is it the best feeling there is, the best feeling of all?
Yeah, the effervescence that creates in society, but also just in your own heart. Remember that next time you're sleepwalking through life on autopilot. I forget it from time to time.
No, everyone does.
You know?
What would make Gabe and me feel really good is to hear from you this week via su@dw.com. If you can take Francesco's advice and be more mindful and help someone, please let us know. That'd make our week.
su@dw.com, just to reiterate. su@dw.com. Come on.
They know. They know.
Science Unscripted.
DW, made for minds.